Today we are celebrating the most amazing event in human history. The resurrection of Jesus Christ from the grave. But there's a problem. Not everyone believes it. So my question to you this morning is, do you? Do you believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ? And if you do, why? And are your reasons for believing in the resurrection sufficient? I think it's important to ask those kinds of questions because if we look at the New Testament, we find out something very interesting, and that is this. The closest followers of Jesus did not immediately buy in to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That was true of every one of his close associates, every one. And if they had to grapple with that reality, is Jesus Christ alive? Then I think it's okay for us to grapple with that. But something changed. What was it that changed? To go from doubt to confidence. That's what we're going to look at today from Luke chapter 24. Actually, to understand Luke chapter 24, we need to understand a little bit of the background as is recorded in the last part of chapter 23. Jesus has died a horrible death. He was crucified on a Roman cross. And a man named Joseph, who was from a town nearby called Arimathea, went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus and gave him permission, and he, along with others, took down the body of Jesus, wrapped it in linen, and placed it in a tomb. In a rock tomb. The Bible's very specific about that. And there were some other followers of Jesus, some women who had followed him all the way from Galilee, some 70 miles north earlier, who were also watching not only the crucifixion, but they saw where Jesus was buried. And that's where we pick up the story, actually in Luke 23, verse 55. Now, the women who had come with him out of Galilee followed and saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and perfumes. And on the Sabbath day, they rested according to the commandment. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb bringing the spices which they had prepared, and they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, behold, two men suddenly stood near them in dazzling clothing. And as the women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, the men said to them, "Why do you seek the living one among the dead? He is not here, but he has risen. Remember how he spoke to you while he was in Galilee, saying that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise again." And they remembered his words and returned from the tomb and reported all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now they were Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James, also other women with them, were telling these things to the apostles. But these words appeared to them as nonsense, and they would not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen wrappings only, and he went away to his home, marveling at what had happened. So there was a time crunch here when Jesus was buried. Joseph knew that. It was toward the end of the day on Friday. He knew that before the end of the Sabbath, he needed to have Jesus placed in the tomb. And so he had to move quite quickly. And there were some women who also were observing from a distance to see where he was laid, and they really wanted to do something for Jesus as well, but apparently they knew they really didn't have time either because they couldn't complete things by the beginning of the Sabbath, which was sundown on Friday. So the women made a decision. They decided to go back to their place of lodging, and they decided to prepare spices and perfumes to anoint his body later. And we're told at the end of chapter 23 that they rested on the Sabbath. So they would have rested from Friday night, sundown, Friday evening sundown, till Saturday evening sundown. That's when the Sabbath would have ended. That's when they could start doing work again as a Jewish person who is observing the Sabbath. So they realized that by the time the sun went down on Saturday, it would have been dark, not the best time to see inside of a dark tomb in a rock. And so they decided to wait until the next morning. But very early in the morning, they came to the tomb. They knew exactly where Jesus had been buried. And did you know what? Notice again what they brought with them? This is emphasized repeatedly here. They were bringing the spices to put on the body of Jesus. So I think it's important to understand this. Here are some of the most loyal women followers of Jesus. And when they came to the tomb, what were they looking for? An empty tomb? They were looking for a body. They were preparing to lovingly place these spices and perfumes on the body of Jesus as an act of worship and honor to him. But when they got there, that's not what they found. They didn't find a body. They found a stone that had been rolled away from the tomb, and then they went down into the tomb, and they looked in there, and they didn't see his body. Now, I have never walked into a tomb like that, but I think it would be a little bit creepy. You would have been kind of a little bit jumpy about what's going to happen next, especially when you don't see in there what you expect to see. And then all of a sudden, these two dazzling creatures, they're called men here. Later, they're referred to as angels, so we know they were angels, but they looked like men in dazzling apparel. All of a sudden, they're there. Now, think about what you would have done if you'd have been one of those two ladies. Walking into this tomb, all of a sudden, you're walking in, you're scared a little bit anyway, and all of a sudden, these beautiful, glorious creatures are in front of you, standing right in front of you. What would you have done? I think you would have done probably what the two women did. It tells us that they went before those angels with their faces to the ground. I assume they were on their hands and knees, if not flat on their faces. They were terrified. They were scared to death. And what I find interesting is that the first words that the angels said to these women was not something that would comfort them. Now, in Matthew, there is one angel who is recorded as saying, "Fear not." But Luke doesn't record that. The first words that Luke records that the angels said to them were words of a mild rebuke. Please notice, it says in verse 5, at the end of the verse, "Why do you seek the living one among the dead?" What are you doing here looking for Jesus in a tomb? The angels went on, "He is not here, but he has risen. Remember how he spoke to you while he was in Galilee, saying that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again." And they remembered his words. Why are you here? Why are you looking for him? And the angels refer them back to what Jesus had said. They said that they needed to remember how he'd spoke to them, saying that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and the third day rise again. Luke, earlier in the book of Luke, has recorded two times where Jesus specifically told the disciples that he was going to suffer, he was going to die, and he always included the fact he was going to rise again. The women had heard those words. Perhaps Jesus had heard them, or they had heard Jesus say those words when they were with the disciples. Perhaps he had said to them at other times as well. But they had heard from the lips of Jesus those very statements. They should have known what was going on, but they didn't because they forgot to remember what Jesus said. But what I love about this is that after being called upon to remember these things, verse 8 says, they remembered his words. And I think at that point it all began to fit together. We don't need our spices. We wasted our money. We wasted our time. Jesus is alive. That's why his body isn't here. And they were so excited that they decided to go and tell this wonderful news to the apostles. The 11 apostles, they were now 11 apostles because Judas, having betrayed his Jesus, had already killed himself. So there were just 11. There were others gathered with the 11, but twice we're told here that in verse 9 it talks about the 11. In verse 10 it talks about the apostles. It's really important. They're going to the apostles plus others gathered with them. They're going to the ones who'd spent 3 years with Jesus as Jesus ministered. And when they got there, they were so excited to say what they had experienced. But verse 11 says, these words appeared to them as nonsense, and they would not believe them. Disciples didn't remember either. It's as if Jesus had never said those words. And then we're told in verse 12 that Peter got up and ran to the tomb, and stooping down and looking in, he saw the linen wrappings only, not the body, and he went away to his home, marveling at what had happened. It's interesting here that Peter, it never says he believed. At this time, and may I add that in the book of John, it describes both John and Peter going to the tomb, but here Luke chooses to just focus on Peter, the leader of the apostles. He went in there, and he came out marveling at what had happened. It doesn't say that he remembered. It doesn't say that he believed. It says that he marveled, and that has the idea of being puzzled by this. He came out really puzzled. He knew something very unique, something special had happened, but he couldn't figure out what it was. And then Luke, as a master storyteller, moves the camera from Peter to two other people who are heading back to their home in Emmaus. Verse 13, and behold, two of them were going that very day to a village called Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about all these things which had taken place. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. But their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. And he said to them, what are these words that you are exchanging with one another as you are walking? And they stood still, looking sad. One of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days? And he said to them, what things? And they said to him, the things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people. And how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. But also some women among us amazed us. When they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who had said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just exactly as the women had said. But him, they did not see. And he said to them, O foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken, was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory? Then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures. So here are two people who'd been with the apostles, been with the other followers of Jesus, who were gathered. They had experienced the reality of Jesus being killed, and they were still trying to figure out what happened after that. We don't know for sure who both people are. We know one of them for sure. His name was Cleopas. And he is the spokesman. The other person is not named. Some people have always assumed that there were two men on the road to Emmaus. You may have heard that before. These men on the road to Emmaus. And a lot of that is because in verse 25, when Jesus speaks to them, he says, "O foolish," and some translations say, "O foolish men." But that's not an accurate translation. The best translation is, "O foolish ones." A man being the second person is not demanded here. It's certainly possible, but it's not demanded. I think there's a high chance that it was actually Cleopas and his wife because they invited Jesus later to stay in their home. But whoever the second person is, that isn't extremely important here. But I think it's important to note what they were doing. They were going to Emmaus, which was some 7 miles away. And obviously that was their home. They'd been in Jerusalem for a while. And when they're walking along, they had a 7-mile journey in front of them. Now that helps us understand they had a while to talk. Because a person walking, they tell us that most of us can walk at a speed, an average speed of about 3 to 4 miles an hour. So if it was a 7-mile distance, they had about a 2-hour trip in front of them. So they're walking along, talking about all these things that had happened, about all the horrible things that had happened surrounding the death of Christ and all the confusion after that. And all of a sudden, Jesus walks up and joins them and begins traveling with them. And verse 16 is a very important verse. It says, "But their eyes were prevented from recognizing him." It wasn't their fault they didn't recognize Jesus. This is what some people call a divine passive Greek phrase. God prevented them from recognizing Jesus. Their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. They didn't recognize his features. They didn't recognize his voice. I think under normal circumstances, they would have. But for some reason, and we'll see that reason in a moment, they were kept from recognizing Jesus. So in this almost humorous interaction between Jesus and these guys, these people, he said, "Are you the only ones?" Or no, he says, "What are these words you're exchanging?" In verse 17, "with one another as you're walking along." And immediately they'd been walking, and it's very clear they stood still looking sad. They stopped walking. And so Cleopas answered and said, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of all the things which have happened here in these days?" He thought everyone knew. If you were in Jerusalem, you knew about Jesus, his crucifixion and some of the drama after that. It was traveling all over the city. He was flabbergasted that someone would show up who didn't know. And then Jesus says, "What things?" As if he didn't know. And so Cleopas tells Jesus about what happened to Jesus. And he goes on and on, talks about the fact that he'd been crucified and chief priests and rulers had delivered him to the sentence of death and been crucified. And they had these high hopes that he was going to deliver Israel, that he was going to be the Messiah and deliver them from the iron rule of Rome. And it had been 3 days since these things had happened. And then there were some women who came with this amazing story. They'd gone to the tomb and Jesus wasn't there. And they said they saw angels. It's interesting that here they say they saw a vision of angels. I'm not sure they believed the women. Vision of angels, and they said he was alive. But then others went to the tomb and they saw just as the women had described it, but they didn't find his body. And then I find very interesting the first response recorded by Luke of Jesus. What did Jesus first say to them? Did he say to them, men, or man and wife? People, dear ones, it's been a rough week. Are you guys doing okay? Didn't say that. He rebuked them. What did he say, verse 25? O foolish ones. The King James says, O fools. O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ, the Messiah, to suffer these things and to enter into his glory? These things had to happen. Then, beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures. He went back to Moses because Moses is the author of the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And he went back to those writings of Moses. He went to some of the prophets and he explained to them that the Messiah had to suffer and die. And I'm not sure all the passages he covered. He may have gone back to Genesis 3. Probably did. When he described the fall of Adam and Eve when they sinned, and how after their sin, God promised that there would be a deliverer who would one day come, who would be born of the seed of woman, and he would be wounded on his heel, but he would crush the head of Satan. I think there's a good chance Jesus also talked to them about the fact that after Adam and Eve sinned, God had to shed blood because he clothed Adam and Eve in clothing of skin, which required the blood of animals to be spilled and to be shed. I'm sure he took time to go into some of the Levitical law, the Mosaic law, and describe to them some of the animals, the sheep and other animals who had to be without spot and without blemish, whose blood would be shed to cover the sins of the people and to point to the coming sacrifice of the Messiah. I'm guessing he went to places like Isaiah 52 and Isaiah 53, written 700 years before Jesus was born. And I'm guessing he talked about the fact that the appearance of the Messiah in those passages would be, the appearance of the Messiah would be marred horribly, to where he would hardly look like a man. And how that the Messiah would be pierced through for our transgressions. My guess is he went to Psalm 22 that spoke of Jesus, the coming Messiah, experiencing having his feet and hands pierced and having soldiers cast lots for his garments. He probably referred to those kinds of accounts and many, many others because they had lots of time. He may have had an hour and a half or two to talk to them about these things. And then they finally arrived at Emmaus. Maybe it's not that they finally arrived. I'm guessing the time passed quickly. Wouldn't you have loved to have been there to hear Jesus share this summary of the Old Testament? I can promise you there's never been a better summary of the Old Testament in all of human history. So they get to Emmaus, and the story continues, verse 28. And they approached the village where they were going, and he acted as if he were going farther. Speaking of Jesus. But they urged him, saying, "Stay with us, for it is getting toward evening, and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he had reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it, and breaking it, he began giving it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to one another, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us?" And they got up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found gathered together the 11 and those who were with them, saying, "The Lord has really risen and has appeared to Simon." They began to relate their experiences on the road and how he was recognized by them in the breaking of the bread. So they come to Emmaus. Jesus is kind of acting like he was just planning to keep going further, but they said, "It's almost evening, please come with us." And so he accepted. And what I find interesting is they sat down for an evening meal. Jesus is the guest, but he acts like the host. Takes the bread. He blesses it. Seems like there's a healthy pattern of giving thanks before you eat your meal. He took the bread, he blessed it, and then he broke it. And when he broke it, something happened. He began giving the bread to them after breaking it, and verse 31 says, "Then their eyes were opened." There it is again. Those two people didn't open their eyes. Their eyes were opened by an outside force. This is another divine passive Greek phrase. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. They knew it was Jesus. And just like that, Jesus vanished from their sight. I think that's an amazing, cool scene. Now, I think it's also important to really recognize here what they said. Once Jesus vanished, I'm surprised by what they didn't say, because I know what I would have said. "He's alive. I saw him." Or I'd have said, "That's Jesus." Or I'd have said, "Where did he go?" That's not what they said. Verse 32, they said to one another, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us?" It wasn't the appearance of Jesus that made the biggest impression on them that day. It was the scriptures. The scriptures were like burning in their heart when Jesus was explaining it to them. The biggest event of that day was not recognizing Jesus. The biggest event of that day was not seeing Jesus vanish from their midst. The biggest event of that day was not even realizing Jesus was alive by seeing him physically. Those were all important. But what was most important to these two people? What the scriptures had done in their hearts. And after realizing what had taken place, I mean, it was evening. By now, it was surely dark, and now they had a 2-hour trip uphill back to Jerusalem. But that's what they did. They got up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem, and they found gathered together the 11 and those who were with them. So these followers of Jesus are still gathered together trying to figure out what's going on. But when they got there, the people who were there, and the Greek's very specific here, it's referring to the people who had stayed in Jerusalem. They were saying in verse 34, "The Lord has really risen and appeared to Simon." That when they burst in the door, it's just like, "He's appeared to Simon." And you can just imagine these two people being so excited because then they got to tell their story about what they experienced on the way to Emmaus and what Jesus said to them and how he was revealed to them in the breaking of the bread. What a wonderful coming together time for all of them. But let's think about this story just a little bit. Why didn't Jesus just reveal himself to those two people on the road to Emmaus right away? He could have. They could have seen him, recognized him, and gone back and told everyone he's alive. Why didn't Jesus do that? Why did he make them wait maybe 2-3 hours to recognize him? I think Luke's emphasis is very clear. It was so that they could understand that his resurrection was based, first of all, on the scriptures. As good and important as those other things were, the scriptures were foundational to everything that was taking place. This was God's plan all along, and it was his revealed plan all along. That's why he said to them, "O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken, was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and enter into his glory?" And then he goes on to explain the scriptures to them. And then what about the two women? What did the angel say to them? "Why do you seek the living one among the dead?" Verse 5. "He is not here, but he has risen. Remember how he spoke to you while he was in Galilee." And then they remembered. What was it? What were the angels pointing the women back to? They were pointing them back to what Jesus has said. And what's cool is that what Jesus has said is now recorded in our New Testament scriptures. The scriptures were to be the most important part of this whole resurrection story. And Jesus drove that point home. So let me ask you, why do you believe in the resurrection? There's none of us in this room who've seen the risen Lord Jesus with our physical eyes yet. But why do we believe in the resurrection? Because of what God has said. Because of the scriptures. Because of what the Old Testament scriptures say. And what Christ has said. And that's enough. It's enough. And it makes all the difference in the world. So let me ask you one more time. Why do you believe in the resurrection of Jesus? The answer to that question makes all the difference. Because he is risen.
He is risen. Three small words that brought the collective pace of humanity to an absolute standstill.
Practical. It changes everything. We've been reminded of some amazing things this morning. And it's all an important part of the gospel. You know what gospel means? It means good news. And in 1 Corinthians 15, the Apostle Paul wrote about the gospel that he preached to the Corinthians. And he described it, he said, "For I delivered to you as of first importance that Christ died," do you remember the next phrase? "According to the scriptures. And that he was buried and he rose the third day according to the scriptures. And then he appeared to Cephas or Peter, and then to the 12, and then more than 500 at one time. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is eternally connected to the scriptures. And that's why we can believe it's true. And that's why we can leave here today knowing that we can claim that with all of our hearts. And part of the gospel message is also this, that just because Jesus died and rose again, it doesn't mean we're all going to go to be with God forever. We have to respond to that good news. Jesus himself said in John 1:12, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to believe in his name. To them he gave the right to become the sons of God, even to those who believe in his name. You must receive him. You must believe in him. You must embrace the resurrection, not as a historical fact, but as a personal response to what Jesus has done for you. So if you've never done that, I encourage you to do that today. Because he lives, we can have hope not only for today, but for all of our tomorrows. Let's leave here today like we really believe that. Thank you.